If you have a copy of the lesson, you can look on point 1B6 is where we're at, character qualifications of elders. Look at those passages real quick. We're not going to go through each one of those qualifications, but we do want to notice something about those two texts. If you remember your grammar from high school or college, when you have a to-be verb, the words that follow it are what? What? I know what you're thinking about, Mike. What? Somebody say? When you have a to-be verb, there's actually no action. It's the word behind it either is the same as the subject or it defines the subject. One of the two. He is Tom, for example. But here we have, the reason I point that out is because in both these texts, that's the kind of verb you have. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 3. An overseer must be. And then these words tell you what kind of man he is. You're looking at his character. The same is true when you get down to verse 4 and 5. Man does not know how to manage his own household well, etc. The only reason you're looking at his household is to tell you what kind of man he is. He must be this kind of man. And so rightfully we call these two texts verses that have to do with the kind of character that a man must have to serve in this capacity. Look at Titus chapter 1. Here the way it's worded is, in verse 6, if any man is. And then you have these character qualifications. When you get to verse 6, latter part of the verse, husband of one wife. Really, man of one woman. He's a one-woman man. That's the kind of man he is. And whether his first wife died and he remarried or not, it's not really the issue. It's what kind of man is he? What is his character? He may only have one wife, but not be this kind of man. And so then the same thing with when you talk about the children, having children who believe. And so again, you look at that from the standpoint of what does it say about the man, character qualifications. And this particular verb is a present tense verb, but so let's suppose all his kids got killed in a car wreck. Is he still that kind of man? That's the issue. And so, anyway, we'll not have time to develop that. But if you want to know what kind of man can serve, this is the kind of man. Let me ask you, if we were to We'll just have a meeting here. We'll get the members together. If we could get 80% of the members to agree, it really doesn't make any difference if a man's ever been married. As long as he's a good man, has all these other character qualifications, is it okay for him to serve? What difference does it make whether he is a one-woman man or not? Let's suppose we don't understand it. Maybe there's some one of these other characteristics. My point is simply this. Whether I understand it or not, this is God's plan. And we need to respect God's plan. And in his wisdom and love, he said, here's the kind of man who will help make the church a pillar and ground of the truth, which is what 1 Timothy 3 talks about. Unfortunately, when people talk about the oversight of the church and the right kind of men to serve. These are the only two passages that are studied sometimes. And a man can be, have all these character qualifications and not be able to do the work. There, maybe a man has a good family. He's a man that's honest. He's a man that's hospitable. He's sensible. But can he do the work? And so when we look at who can serve as elders, this, I think, personally, is a very big thing to look at. It's important not only from the standpoint of selecting men, and it is important. 1 Timothy 3, look at 1 Timothy 3, verse 10. Before a man can serve, what must happen? Be tested. Who does that? The congregation. It's not the preacher's job to appoint elders. It's not the elder's job to appoint elders. And we see this as somewhat of a pattern throughout God's dealings with his people. Back in the time of Moses, he said, you select men to be judges, and so forth. In Acts 6, you see they selected men that were to be over the task that needed taken care of. And so it's the congregation's responsibility. So what does that tell the congregation that's a part of their responsibility? Not just the selecting, but what?
They need to know what to look for and what to
do. That's right. They need to know what are the qualifications. And we'll talk about just a minute that congregation need elders. What's worse than having no elders? Bad elders. And once you get them in, it's hard to get them out. And unfortunately, congregations sometimes select men who are not qualified, either by character or by work qualification. So let's do spend just a few minutes. We're not going to have time to go through all these verses. Maybe we'll do that in some lessons here in the not-too-distant future. But look over at Acts. Well, first of all, let me look at Acts 11:20. When people think about the work of elders, what often comes to mind? We're going to have elders now. And so what are they going to be deciding?
Most of the time it's about the building or about the fund.
About the building or the fund, what men we're going to support, how much we're going to pay them, who we're going to have for a gospel meeting, what his wages will be, et cetera, et cetera. Money. Of all the passages in the New Testament about elders and their work, you help me if I'm wrong. This is the only one that talks about elders and money. Verse 30, they send it in charge of Barnabas and Saul to the elders. This was a fund that was collected for needy brethren in the area of Judea. And the elders would have the jurisdiction as to dispersing those funds in the churches where the need was. Does anyone know of any other verse in the New Testament that connects elders and their work with money? Anybody? I don't know of any. And yet oftentimes, that is the focal point. Unfortunately, sometimes men who serve as elders, that's the focal point of their work, making decisions about money. And while I do not want to take away from the fact that elders should take the leadership in that, we'll talk more about the idea of the common fund in a minute. It's not their money. At the same time, that's really not the main focus of the work of these men. Let's look at Acts chapter 20. In verse 17, what kind of class does Paul have? Elders' class. He calls the elders of the church at Ephesus. And so he talks to these men. The way he starts out is verse 18, middle of the verse. You yourselves know from the first day that I set foot in Asia how I was with you the whole time. And Paul talks about his work there. Maybe Paul was like one of these Olympic athletes that liked to talk about himself. Look how great a job I did. I'm the greatest. Is that why he talked about his work there? Say, let me show you all these things I did and how courageous I was and how impartial I was. Obviously not. When you get down to verse 35, he tells these men why he took the time in this class to talk to them about his work while he was there amongst them. And he said this. He said, in everything I showed you by working hard in this manner. And so he said, you remember how I conducted myself, the things I did while I was there? This is a pattern for you. This shows you the kind of work you ought to be doing as shepherds of God's flock, which he talks about in verse 28. And so when you start looking through this discussion that Paul had, you see such things as verse 20, and I'm not taking everything, but just to note some of the things. He said, how I did not shrink from declaring to you anything that was profitable and teaching you publicly and from house to house. So here's a man with good character. Good character. He's only had one wife and he's loyal to her. Wonderful children. Attends church all the time. But he's a little bit intimidated about going to someone's house and sitting down at the table and talking to them about their soul. And maybe he just won't do it. Can he serve as an elder? Folks, all across this land, you have men with the title of elder who won't do it and can't do it. It may not be a lack of knowledge. What else is required in order to do this?
Be able to teach.
What?
To be able to teach and encourage.
You've got to be able to teach. Courage. What was it? Courage. You've got to have courage. And you've got to have concern for people. And you've got to be willing to get hurt. Because when you go out and start talking to people about things they don't want to hear, guess what's going to happen? And so a fellow's got to be ready for that if he's going to serve in this capacity. He talks about those very things. In fact, in this very section, in verse 19, he talked about the plots of the Jews against him. And so there are men who will serve as elders as long as everything's lovely, but then when the heat gets on and difficulties arise, they're ready to quit. And yet, sometimes that's the very time they're needed. To stay the ship, to lead the course. And so Paul said, in the face of all these plots and things that happened, he said, I continue to work. And down in verse 26, I testify to you this day that I'm innocent of the blood of all men, for I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole purpose of God. Whether friend or foe, whether somebody you like to be with or don't like to be with, the point is, as elders, you're to tell them what they need to hear. As shepherds, verse 28, over the flock. And so this is an excellent passage. Like I said, we don't have time to study it all, but it's not the only one. I've listed several others here, 1 Thessalonians 5. 1 Timothy 3 alludes to it. Talks about the work of an elder, and if he doesn't know how to manage his house, how can he take care of the church of God? And Hebrews 13, comparison to a watchman, and so forth. Any other comments on the work qualifications?
It takes time, Steve. I noticed, you know, that if a man is qualified and he wants to do the work, but he is so busy with, you know, either work or family or something and does not have the time to spend to what it takes to do this, then, you know, that would hinder him from really being the shepherd or the one.
I appreciate that, Linda, and that's so true. Linda said a person may have the courage and the knowledge but not have the time to serve in this capacity. And while it may not be appropriate for people to brag on themselves, I can brag on others. Paul did. And I just want to tell you about some of the men I've served with in the years I've been here. They probably don't want me to call their names, and I'm tempted to do it anyway. But men who work long hours at secular work, but knew we had something we needed to do, a visit with someone or whatever, and they'll either cut their work short. One guy used to come to our meetings and have to go back to work. And others will come without supper. They've been a long day, but they're going to be there for the work. And I've been privileged to serve with those kind of men. And the two men that I serve with now are those kind of men. But they're not the only ones. In years past, that's been the case. And I appreciate to have served with those kind of men in years past. I can remember vividly serving with Glenn. When Glenn was never had a waking moment that he wasn't in pain, I say, Glenn, we have a visit tonight. And so he'd schedule his pain medicine to where he could go with me on that visit if need be. And that's the kind of man we've had to serve this congregation in years past, and it's really been a blessing. Good comment, Linda. Appreciate it very much. Mike? First Timothy chapter 3, verse 10, Mike's talking about, if you didn't hear him.
And it's talking about, you mentioned the idea of the first testing of vision. Now, I would assume that this testing is testing against the qualifications.
That's what I understand it to be, yes, sir.
Now, it's interesting that it says it's under the deacon. Does this apply also to the elder? Does it say it to the elder?
Well, it says also. So the deacons have to be tested, but then he says these men must also be tested. Also, who else? Obviously, if the deacons have to cert qualifications to meet, and they've got to be tested, he said these men also, like the elders, is what I take him to mean, must be tested. And so then you put with that what you see as a pattern of God's, with God's people, of letting them select their representatives. Moses, Acts 6, etc. That's the one reason I take it that way. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Well, and not to get into the detailed qualifications, okay? I know that's not what you're trying to do. But it mentions their wives. It says their wives likewise. And is that going to apply also to the elders' wives? But the word likewise, I'm reading that in ESV. In verse 11.
Women likewise. He didn't talk about elders' wives before, so since it's a, I say he didn't talk about elders' wives before, so either it's one of two things. It's either talking about women, either including elders' wives and deacons' wives, or, don't get me off in this, it's talking about women serving as deacons. But anyway, go ahead. Okay, good point. Instead of women also with deacons and elders, but women also must have the qualification. In other words, what you're saying?
They must have some of the qualifications that their husbands would be deacons.
Okay.
Or it goes back to the elders. I don't know which way.
Okay. Yeah. I've taken it years past to refer to, because this is just general, it just says women. Some versions actually say, I think, will depend on our resident KJV authority. Verse 11, what does it say?
Wives.
Your daughter's faster than you are. Wives. All right, so the King James translates it wives. And that's one reason probably over the years we've taken it that way. You'll note a marginal note, though, in the New American Standard, if you have it, it says either deacons' wives or deaconesses. In other words, the word wife or woman, we've made this point before, there's no different word in their language for those two words. And so whether the translators translate it wife or woman, they're doing it contextually, not on the basis of the word. So when he writes women, can that mean wives? Yes, but not necessarily so. And you have to determine based on context. But since it's been taken to mean wives, wives of who? Generally, it's been taken to be talking about the wives of elders and deacons, the ones they just talked about. And as Mike pointed out, they too have some character qualifications. Yes, sir?
Paul was talking talking about what he did. It's not just what he said, but what he did. He lived this farm in front of me, you know, and they can see the things that they need to work on. And I give one thing about Paul. He had some hard knocks, but he bounced back. I think that's one of the things is trying to get over them. They have to have the ability to bounce back.
Okay, good point, Ennis. And Paul demonstrated that. He went through a lot of difficulties, but it didn't discourage him, didn't cause him to quit. We need those kind of men with that perseverance. Mike, do you have a follow-up comment? Good point.
And you said to all the other churches, that was, to use the word burden, was a tremendous burden on him, responsibility he felt. And you know that, you know, an elder had to have love and concern, always shown them love and concern. You see that love and concern exemplified in what he wrote to them and pleaded with them and beseech them to do right.
That love and concern that Mike's talking about is so crucial, and that's why Paul was always so gentle and sweet to them, right? Sometimes love and concern is manifest in some pretty severe rebukes when you see, like, 1 Corinthians, for example, and the first part of Galatians. Yes, Craig? That's an excellent comment and observation. If you look at look at what Craig's talking about. Verse 2 says the overseer must be above reproach. When you get to the deacons, that's the first thing. Verse 8, they must be men of dignity. And then you get to the women in verse 11, they must be dignified. In fact, some in studying the character qualifications will say that really that's the qualification. All the other statements are merely elaborating on what it means to live that kind of life, to have that kind of character. But that's an interesting observation, I think, Craig makes. And they will receive accusations. Paul alludes to that in 1 Timothy 5 and tells Timothy not to receive an accusation against an elder except on the word of two or more witnesses. They will be accused if they're doing their work, but they need to not have just reason for that. Tracy?
Well, just to clarify, instead of it's 11 saying wives instead of women, this goes back even before a man holds a position in church as a deacon or an elder, that as a woman, you need to watch what you do. You need to have these characteristics because you can stumbling block for your husband that may hold a future position in the church. And I think it's a general statement as women, instead of specifically stating that it's a wife of a deacon or an elder, just okay, to have these qualifications.
One thing, as Tracy observed, a woman can make all the difference whether or not a man serves as he ought to. If he's thin-skinned and cries to her, what's going to happen? If she can't take her husband being sometimes abused, what's going to happen? If she's going to complain about it, the extra time and all that it takes, what's going to happen? And those are good points that Tracy makes. Yes, Sally?
Why do you think that he talks about qualifications for wives for deacons, but he doesn't talk about wives for qualifications of elders?
Well, okay, I'm back to the fact that I've taken that to be wives of deacons, just wives. In other words, he doesn't qualify. If it's wives, I'm not sure it's even wives, but if it's wives, he just now addresses that category generally. Wives must be. And so what wives? Well, contextually, that'd be elders' wives and deacons' wives. He doesn't say the wives of deacons are the wives of elders. He just says wives, and contextually of the two men. But again, I'm not even sure that he's talking about their wives, but rather about women who were appointed to special service in congregations. No, we're not going to get into that. But anyway. All right. Yes. Rod?
Just a comment, and you may have made this. I don't think you have, but none of these qualifications are mentioned in the Bible. Should we dismiss if for some reason I decided, well, I don't plan on being an elder? I'm single.
We're going to have a talk if you decide that, but go ahead.
So someone in the congregation said, I don't know, be an elder. I'm single. I've never married. Therefore, I know I won't be qualified. What on this list should you not strive for?
Good point. And it's been made so many times that any godly man will strive to have this kind of character. And Tracy alluded to that very thing, that women in general ought to just be this kind of woman. And so those are good points. That's right. And really, a godly, mature man ought to have the character that's here described. Congregational meetings. Let's look at this for a little bit. Look at Acts 14:23. We're talking about the oversight of the local church. So what we have here in Acts 14, Paul's on his first preaching journey. And you see in verse 21, when they had preached the gospel to that city, that's Derbe, which would be right at the end of this journey as far as distance, you know, and then he kind of retraces his steps. So to Derbe, and when they had preached the gospel to that city and made many disciples, they returned to Lystra, to Iconium, and to Antioch. And so, were there churches in Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch? Were there? How do you know? Verse 23. When Paul went back to those cities, when he first got there, did those churches have elders?
No.
Okay, not before they appointed them, right? So churches can exist without elders. They can. And we see that here. On your sheet, question 8A. That's not the one I want. What did I write that on there for? Question 7. That's the one I want. Question 7. Something is blank where there are no elders. Titus 1:5. Something is lacking. Something remains. Something is wanting. In other words, this church has not reached the point of development that God intended. So the way this version reads, set in order what remains. I think some versions use the term wanting. What does the ESV say, Mike, on Titus 1:5? What remains? Okay, that's like this one then. What remains? There's something remaining. In other words, if a church doesn't have the oversight that we're studying about here in these verses, then that ought to be a goal of the people that are part of it. Now, but since churches can exist without elders, and we know they did, now what? So let's go to Acts chapter 4 and verse 32. Here was a need being met. It may have been partly benevolence, may have been partly the support of the apostles. But it was a need being met. And the need was being met by these early disciples in Jerusalem contributing into a fund. And you'll note in verse 32, the congregation of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and not one of them claimed that anything belonging to him was his own. But all things were common property to them. So what that means is nobody had his own wife. One wife shared by everybody, right? Not hardly. What doesn't belong to, is not their own anymore, but is common, are the funds that have been contributed into this fund for relief. That's further indicated in chapter 5 and verse 4 as this story continues. And Peter asked Ananias the question, while it remained, did it not remain what?
Your own.
So this is not a verse that's teaching communism. But it was no longer his own when it was put into the fund. Now what was it?
Common.
What does common mean? Belonging to all. So when we contribute into the treasury, it's not your money, it's not my money, it's not the elders' money. We say it's the Lord's money. There's a sense in which that's true. But there's also a sense in which it's our money. It's common to us. It belongs to everybody who is a part of the local work. Okay? And that's Bible language. That's not my language. That's the language right here in the text. Okay. Now, look at Philippians 1:27. I have on the outline the church is a team. What words in that text says that the church is a team?
Striving together.
And those two words actually translate a word. That's a compound word that means athletes striving together, which is our word for team. And so the local church is a team. And we saw in our study of the purpose of the local church, that's what it is about, is people having fellowship, working and worshiping together. When we defined the local church in our first lesson, we talked about this very concept. And so here's a team. A group of people striving together for the faith of the gospel. And here is a work that they want to share in and have the authority to share in. Not just want to, but have the authority to share in. And so we all contribute into a fund to do that work. Now that fund belongs to the members of the team. Okay. There are no elders. How do we decide how that money is spent? Without elders, is there any other way other than the congregation deciding? I know the answer. We'll have a business meeting of the men to decide. Right? You mean business meetings are not scriptural of men? I happen to agree with Sally. I don't know of one verse in the entire New Testament that talks about a business meeting of men to decide the work of the church. Does anybody know one? I don't know of one. I know of two places where the congregation came together to decide about some things relating to the church. One of them had to do with money. One of them had to do with a doctrinal issue, and they sent agents to represent them. The first one is Acts chapter 6, and we have this on your lesson here in Acts 6, 1 through 6, point number 6. Look at Acts 6. Verse 1, at this time, while the disciples were increasing in number, a complaint arose on the part of the Hellenistic Jews against the native Hebrews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily serving. Just mark out the word of the two words of food. It's not there. So the 12 summoned the congregation. Summoned who? The congregation of the disciples. And said, it's not desirable for us to neglect the word of God in order to serve tables. So we're going to pick out 7 men to be your servants. Is that what he said? Brethren, select from among you 7 men of good reputation. So they called the congregation together. And the congregation was to reach some kind of an agreement on what men would serve as their special servants to take care of dispersing the funds to the needy widows. I don't know how large the church was in Jerusalem at this time. Pretty large. You reckon everybody in that congregational meeting had perfect agreement about which men to select? There's nothing in the text, but just knowing people. If you get 500 people together, say we're going to select 7 men from our number, you reckon it'll be exactly the same 7 names, or you reckon there might be 15 names suggested? And you reckon there might be some that have a question maybe about one of those men. If a team, a football team, let's say, wants to run a play, and it's going to be a pass play, does every player on the line and every person in the backfield have to agree that's the best play? But in order for that play to be executed, what must happen? Everybody must agree to work it with a team decision. And that's just the nature of working together. And that's the analogy you have in Philippians 1, and then you have this statement about the common fund. And so we don't have a lot of detail about collective work together financially because that's really not the focus of the New Testament about the work of the local church. But what we do have shows that there is a common fund, there is a teamwork, and we do see congregations coming together to decide things that related to their work. These 7 men were representatives or servants of the congregation. Yes, Mike, go ahead.
Do you suppose, if you look at how when we would establish the men, for one of the offices, we don't do that at one time. There's a process of time. Do you think there's a process of time right here in this?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it, but that's a good question. I wouldn't be surprised there was.
Obviously, there couldn't be much time because of the meeting.
Right. I don't know, Mike. That's a good question. You have an answer?
No, I just wouldn't know how to do it immediately.
If you don't have an answer, Rod says you don't ask a question unless you have a solution. So, see, you can't ask unless you know the answer. Okay. I don't know, but it's a good question.
Good answer.
Sir?
Good answer. Good answer.
You agree, huh? That's why it's a good answer. He agrees. Okay. Yes.
I'll ask you a hard question.
Why do you want to do that? But go ahead.
Well, you say men's business meetings aren't scriptural. Why do churches have men's business meetings?
Don't ask me. We don't have them.
Well,
ask them. Go ask them. Don't ask me. I think I know why, but you go ask them. Yes, Craig?
Well, I'll just say I've asked one, and the response is, it's from a preacher. congregational meeting is the men's business. It's a congregational meeting because the women are in subjection to their husbands.
Look at question 8A2. So Craig says, some say, well, the reason you have to have men's business meeting, because if you have women there, women are not supposed to be in a leadership role. If a husband consults his wife before buying a new house, has he forfeited his authority?
No,
he has not. Let's suppose we got a group of men, just men, in a business meeting. Turn to 1 Peter 5, verse 5. Can a man be out of place in that meeting based on 1 Peter 5, 5?
Yes.
He can, can't he? If he doesn't respect the older man. Should the weight of godly men who are knowledgeable have be heavier than the weight of, say, a novice in a meeting like that? So can that be abused by having all Christians, men of all ages in that meeting? Could that be abused? Yes. Does it mean it's wrong? No. No, it doesn't. I invite ladies to speak up in this class. I think I maintain pretty good control. I want to. But could that be abused? Could a woman try to take my class over?
Yes.
But we're not going to allow it. Nor will I allow a man. If the elders want somebody else to lead the class, get them up here. But as long as I'm in the front of the class, or some other man, he's in a position of authority in this class. So Craig's point, I think he's right on, that's one of the reasons. I think another reason, David, is tradition. People have never questioned that's what churches of Christ have always done. But that's a whole other study about congregational meetings. Yes, ma'am.
We were worshiping someplace else, and they had a men's business meeting. And after the meeting, I asked one of the men what they talked about during, and what was decided and those kind of things. And what I was told is they wanted you to know they'd invited you.
Whose money is it? Is it your part of that, your money?
Yes.
Yes, it is. You had a comment?
Yeah, I had a question. Make sure I'm not.
Is it a hard question?
It depends how it's presented. So I think you tell me if I'm wrong, that if when we have men, because we do have meetings where we'll have it and say the men are going to meet afterwards, but doesn't it make it authoritative once the elders, we do have elders, if the elders decide that we're going to have a meeting and it's just men, isn't that what makes it scriptural? Or are you saying it's not scriptural to eliminate the women and have a man's meeting?
I just don't know of any statement, command, or example where the men are called together, excluding the women, to decide what's to be done with a common fund.
So is your personal opinion that
it's sinning? I say there's no authority for it. You'll have to decide the rest. I don't know of any authority for it.